Welcome to Spaghetti Lunchers, the world-building podcast where you throw spaghetti at the wall, and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. On today's episode, we will be discussing the gods. But in a fun twist, we are going to do another live improv episode for y'all today, very similar to the one we did on fantastical government departments.
So we do not know the type of gods we're doing. We will both be doing a different god, and we'll be rolling a d20 off of a list of 20 ideas or
20 like, different potential domains.
Yes,
all taken from
D&D subclasses.
D&D subclasses. I did try for this list to stay away from subclasses from the cleric class because that felt a little
on the nose.
Yeah.
So like the point is creating gods that are different, like not like, oh, here's another god of war.
Like, right. It's like
ideally something a little bit off.
Yeah, like something different. Like, and there's like, so there are words in here. Kyle has not seen this list, so everything will be really brand new, spanking new to him. But so the way this works is that we're gonna roll a d20,
and then we'll have like a minute or two,
and then
we'll come up with our idea,
and
we'll go.
And then we'll go. So Kyle, do you want to start? Do you want me to roll for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. 15. Kyle, tell me about the god of redemption.
The god of redemption. What's her name? Want to give him a name?
Adam.
Adam?
Adam.
You just kind of took part of redemption?
Yes,
Adam. There you go. All right, Adam.
it was better than Dempt.
Dempt, yeah. It's
just, Dempt doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Adam, though. It sounds like kind of like old Aramaic, like...
And a cheese.
That's a dumb... Is it pronounced Edom?
No, but it's close.
It's close, yeah.
All right, so Edom, the god of redemption. Edom is beginning to have a bit of a beef with the god that oversees death, because Edom is getting a little bit too liberal with his application of his domain, which is that those who die have an opportunity to redeem themselves and be returned to life. And...
Edom is the most bureaucratic god.
Is he?
That's how I'm envisioning it. But
no,
keep going. Keep
no,
going.
No. It's very much like a bit more on the relaxed side of.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Oh, hey, you get a shot at redemption. Did you do what you needed to do to be redeemed? Great. Go on back.
Do you get brought back to life, resurrected, or do you get reincarnated?
Resurrected, but I'm also inclined to say you are reset to an earlier age. So it's a mix.
Ooh.
You're not reincarnated. You're not resurrected. You're just sent back to like, you're 18 now. You're an adult. So no one has to take care of you. You don't have to be raised by your parents. Now you're an adult. Do a life again.
Do you get to keep your knowledge from your advanced age or your previous life?
I'm going to say, yeah.
Nice.
So you've got...
That would make for a fascinating society.
Yes. And so originally, Adam would do this for like special people, for people who were like, or people who were, you know, like a tragic story, someone who like really had an opportunity, like it made sense to try to give them redemption to go again.
Right.
It's like you were cut down in battle, but you like fought heroically. It's like, well, here's your shot at redemption. Like you deserve better than
that. Like you made, there was a single like tragic mistake that you made, but it was made with good intentions or something.
Like and this kind of thing.
Can you see that?
Yeah. It's not, oh, I lived a long life. I made it to the end. I died of natural causes. You don't really get an opportunity for redemption because you succeeded. You got through the bulk of it. Mm-hmm. But if it was something befell you.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't through no fault of your own, and you're gone. Here's a shot to get back, but they don't want to just put you right back in that same situation because you have a lot of baggage then with like people around you, and you'd be questioned all the time. So they just reset you to a different age, and they probably put you in a different location, and say, "Here, live a different life and try again." So you can kind of, you know, you have redemption to have a life that was. Like there's like a cosmic justice thing of this was an unjust thing to do. We will give you some justice and you get to try again. But
death wants these people.
Well, death's getting annoyed because Edom is getting a little bit too, we'll say, sentimental. Edom is more inclined to give a shot at redemption to people than he used to be.
Why? What changed?
He's just getting more impressed by, I'm going to say, by the results. he sees the stories of what happens, and it's been, because he's been quite judicious and selective, they've been really good stories. They've really done a good job. These people are going there and they're fucking redeeming the shit out of it. So he's like, yeah, let's do more of that.
But he's curating the data.
He's curating the data. And now that he's not curating as much, it's kind of becoming a bit messy. So here's the situation you're in. There's a second version of that. Massive war is happening right now.
Right.
Death's raking it in.
Yeah.
Just slews of death.
What's the god of death's name?
Ith.
Deet.
It's the first half of Ethan, too.
Finally, you figured it out.
Oh, God. And I was swallowed by death today.
And Kyle dies.
So we'll call him Eth. Ethel.
Eth.
We'll call him Eth.
Eth, big Eth.
All right, so Eth is... No, it doesn't work.
It doesn't. It's too much.
It's so stupid.
It's so dumb.
I hate it. What we'll call him?
Morty?
The next word that came to my mind was Miralax.
Well, that's like sometimes you shit yourself to death. Miralax, the god of death.
We'll call him Luxemvia.
Luxemvia?
Yeah.
You're the one saying this, okay.
Yeah. I'm not gonna say the god of death's name very often. Luxemvia is eating good because of this war that's happening.
And it's all flowing pretty well.
Jesus. And because it is this massive war fought between kings, you know, all the young men of these kingdoms are dying, and a lot of them are conscripted, so it's also the sense of this unjust nature that, like, they don't want this war. It's a stupid war fought for petty reasons. They're dying.
Right.
And then so Edom is getting a little bit more involved because this doesn't feel right. And right. Also, they're, like, losing all this generation of people.
Right.
So they're just – he's just, like, redeeming just nonstop. Go, go, go.
It's like get none of these people should have been here. Yes, they might have done some terrible things, but it's not their fault. Unfortunate circumstances.
Yeah, and trying to kind of reset a lot of them, but not all of them, but like more than he used to.
Okay.
Because if you just reset all of them, you're also basically saying, well, you have an infinite supply of soldiers now. Keep going.
Yeah.
So there's like,
the war is also like never really stopping.
And maybe it stopped. Maybe it's not. I don't know. That's neither here nor there. But the point being, like, you have the two versions of what is he doing. I think it's better with the first version.
Yeah.
The second one is also interesting, if you want to tell a war story, but I think it works really well with, like, it's been successful, so now it's happening more, and now it's not being successful as much because of the lack of curation and creating this conflict that, like, rather than, like, when the god of death is, you know, just, like, being, you know, like, oh, everything's going great, I'm dead or coming in everywhere, but now it's, like, you know, and so the conflict between the two of them was less of a problem then, but now it's more of a problem because it's, hey... Like, everything's going, like, I'm under my normal amount of death. Like, I don't have any more dead than normal. You can't be taking away a bunch of them now. What are you doing? Like, you're interfering with the natural order.
It's almost like the deities, all of these gods thrive on basically how much, I don't want to say how many souls they're getting, that's too D&D, but
how much of their domain they really, it's like how active their domain is.
Right, and what's cool about this, what you're talking about, is that you're showing that there are, which is often very not true in a lot of made up pantheons, is that
they're made up.
You're showing interdependencies.
Yeah, well, and
the god of death cannot do their job fully.
Because
their success depends on what the God of Redemption is doing.
Yeah, because he
could, that's interesting.
The God of Redemption could fuck up everything,
right?
And say, I'm taking everybody back. But then the God of Death could say, cool, well, no one's ever dying.
Right.
So you don't get to send anybody back. And they, like, there's a friction where they both need to do their job in unison.
In balance.
In harmony. Balance is the key of everything. So, yeah.
I like, well, and I think you see, I don't know why you see it as two different versions. I see it as the same deity, just in different circumstances.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. It's the same deity. It's two versions of when he's getting overactive.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
The deity is doing the same thing no matter what. I was saying there's two versions where he's having a conflict with death, and those were the two versions.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, yeah,
cool.
That's
beautiful.
That's my idea. All right.
Beautiful.
All right. Roll it for me, Ethan. Shit. Roll it successfully.
9.
Broken oaths.
The god of broken oaths.
This is based off the Oathbreaker Paladin, if you weren't aware. Ethan's lost in thought, and we're going to let him be that way.
I swear to God, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Can he make this putt? Is this-
Why would there need to be a god of broken oaths?
You tell me.
There's always this sense of like swearing an oath or making a promise, right? That it's always a net. It's sometimes a net. It's often a net good, right?
I think it's implied that it's always a good. Retaining a promise is like the it's your great honor.
Like Ron Swanson, I'm a man of my word, right?
Yeah. Like the whole Harry Potter like end game is all about the oath that you swore, the promise you made.
Right. And so it's always implied that it is a good.
Yeah.
In the real world, though, you and I both know that not all promises made or oaths sworn are good. As a matter of fact, that's why a lot of militaries will have laws that will exempt soldiers from carrying out duties that they feel are unjust or evil or wrong.
That's why
cruel.
That's why we have divorce.
Like exactly. No fault no, divorce.
It's the like, same point. But it's like, the same, break an oath.
It's the same point. You made an oath and then you break it. Or like say, oh, I will give you, like you make an oath in the moment, like I will give you whatever you need. It's like, well, that can often be really self-detrimental and leave people open to manipulation. So why would you need a god of broken oaths? The god of broken oaths is actually the god of self-protection and self-love.
So he's interfering to make people break oaths.
Correct.
Interesting.
The god of broken oaths exists to govern those exchanges between people where an oath is causing more harm than good. So that moment when you feel trapped by a promise you've made and you feel that moment of courage to stand up and set a boundary.
Yeah.
That's the god of broken oaths working through you.
Okay.
When you see it doesn't apply to all oaths, right? Like I still think that, you know, I'm trying to think, for example, I'm going through like the Hippocratic oath, right? To do no harm.
But what about like an oath to another god?
I think it again, I think that's why it's important. That's why the god of broken oaths is the only god who is focused on the individual. On the human, not actually, is the only one who doesn't think they know best.
Yeah, but will they interfere if it's an oath to another god?
I think they will. I think they're almost like a public defender.
Interesting. How do the gods take that?
I think they wouldn't exist if it weren't for a reason. And I think that having this mechanism for breaking oaths is actually what is solving a lot of problems, because what happened is that for the longest time, humanity, mortaldom, only existed to serve the whims of the gods and basically became agents in proxy wars and proxy conflicts because they had sworn these oaths. And so all that was happening was that humanity was slaughtering itself in the name of upholding these oaths, which at the end of the day was actually causing harm to the gods because they did not have the opportunity for as much worship because there were just fewer people because they were constantly caught in these proxy wars. And so they knew that they had to have a way to break these oaths, to create a third way, basically. Basically a way to create an alternative path forward. And they realized I think that the god of broken oaths is the first person the first mortal that broke their oath to their deity and said, no, I will not do this because what you are asking me to do is not good for humanity here. It is not like you're asking me to kill a loved one, kill a friend, do something terrible, and I'm saying no. And the net benefit from that became immediately clear. Like, there was suddenly a huge catastrophic war was averted because someone said no. And so humanity was able to live, and the gods saw and they flourished.
Yeah.
Because there were, because war was averted and souls were saved, which meant more worship for the deities, right?
Yeah.
So that's where they recognize the importance of, yeah, of yes, being able to make an oath, but also needing to have a something or someone to govern the breaking of an oath when it is
okay.
needed.
Two things. Who is it that God commanded to kill their son?
He commanded Abraham to kill Isaac.
Okay. There's a great Family Guy joke. I don't know if you remember seeing it, where it was like Abraham and Isaac walking down from the mountain, and Isaac just like, and they're both walking like in silence, and Isaac just goes, "What the fuck was that?"
Right, exactly.
And that's such a good, and it immediately cuts away.
Yeah.
But like, I was just thinking about that a lot in that moment.
Like, you want to talk about what the hell that was?
You just tried to kill me, bitch. Second, I think this is interesting, and I love the idea that it's a mortal who did it. Now, I think it's cool if the gods were waiting for somebody to break an oath, to say no, and then they appointed them as the deity.
Oh, it was a test.
It wasn't a test. It was just like they're waiting for somebody to prove that they were worthy. They weren't testing everybody.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
It was like this, like it was the sword in the stone. If you pulled it out, then you indeed got this.
Right.
And somebody said no, and the gods said, "Guys, we found them. This is the person who will finally govern this thing that we've all been looking for someone to be in charge of, but none of us could do it because we all have too much stake in this."
Well, because we are, it needed to be a mortal.
Yeah.
Because
they actually understand.
They understand immortal beings of this, like they cannot see beyond themselves. Like, that's the ironic part, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that you'd think that these all powerful beings would be able to see so much. No, they're so focused on their own bullshit that they get lost. They can't see the actual implications of what the downstream impacts of what their choices mean.
But I think it's also,
that's why a mortal needed to do
I think another incentive that they have is the potential that someone breaks an oath and then becomes available and like they're back on the market.
Oh, that's also, I hadn't thought about that, but that's also true.
Like there's multiple reasons they can maybe be invested in this.
It's like the How I Met Your Mother episode, you know, the window is open.
Yeah. But they also, the window is open. The episode is so weird.
Yeah. Super creepy.
Yeah. The whole show's
creepy. The whole show. Ted is a fucking predator. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. It's problematic as shit. Anyway.
Marshall rules, but.
Marshall's the best. Marshall's the only good character.
Oh, totally.
But the gods also are going to want, they're not going to want people who are doubting their oaths to the god, because they want the most fervent, like zealous followers.
Sure.
Who will do whatever needs to be done and won't waver and won't accidentally fuck it up.
Yeah.
It's like if you sent somebody who's wavering on their oath to commit an assassination or something, and then they waver and they don't do it and they get caught, and now everybody knows you tried to send that. And you're like, no, so only send like the diehards. So like, if you're a god, you want diehards. Like, you want people who've made an oath are only the people who are like servants, paladins. They're not worshipers.
Right.
You know, it's like the diehard. So they have more of a reason for it.
Agreed.
And then when it comes to like the human to human stuff, it's so much like it's all, you know, you hand wave that. Like, it's just in the wash. It doesn't really matter as much, because it is just like, yeah, you fulfilled saying no. Like, you broke an oath. You exited the military. You exited a marriage. You like kick somebody out of your life. You know, whatever it is. It's pretty mundane human stuff, but
that opened up a whole other window for me, pun very much intended, because suddenly it occurred to me the god of broken oaths would actually be the god that I imagine judges and lawyers worship.
Maybe.
Like,
it's probably a god of justice, or, you know, as well.
But I could see it be like, it's maybe one of the, right, like,
They play a role.
They are definitely part of it, because they are about governing. They are about, just like justice, they are about weighing the good and bad.
Well, right? How much are they doing to provide protection to people who are facing retribution? Say, you try to break an oath and leave an assassin's guild. well, they might not take kindly to that.
I think they would be, I mean, similarly, I think they would be the patron saints of oathbreakers. I think, or turncoats or whatever. I think at the human level, it gets more complex.
Yeah, because if, are they going to, like, you know, if the assassins come to kill an oathbreaker, does the god of oathbreakers, like, imbue them with
the god
power?
Of broken oaths.
Broken oaths. Do they imbue them with power? Or do they?
I don't know.
Do they put them in? Are they like in a witness protection like program that's available to people where they can kind of like?
I imagine that's something that you could probably petition, like the temple of the broken oath for. Like, if you are in danger, you could go to them and be like, basically, they are a sanctuary.
Yeah, and you could say, hey,
they are a neutral zone.
Depending on like who you left,
and the circumstances,
and then, like, say you left the mafia or the Assassin's Guild, and you can say, hey, could you just like disguise, and then they can, you know, cast some spell and be like, you are permanently disguised, you can go live anywhere.
But also, just in the same vein, if you were to come and be like, oh yeah, I you know, I married my wife and then I'm bored, I'm tired of her, I want out of this marriage, they'd be like, no, fuck you.
Yeah, we're not gonna help.
We're not doing that. You're breaking it, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's they're helping people in certain situations where it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the idea now also of there being at this neutral zone, temple of the broken oath.
Yeah.
That helps people navigate these changes and can be like a witness protection program or like a almost like a halfway house. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, the god of broken oaths.
Cool.
Yeah, lightning round.
All right.
We will have no time to prepare. We just have to say the first words that come to our mind. I'm going to roll for you.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. 13. God of devotion.
Odd choice. We'll try and make it work. Okay. So the god of devotion, they're a god who basically is the support player for the rest of the gods.
Nice.
And their job is to make sure that all devotion is happening in the proper way and with the proper amount of fervor. So if people aren't worshiping, then the god of devotion might intervene. If they are a monitor of every temple to make sure that all temples are happening to the specifications of that god. If the temple of Athena is not exactly the way that Athena wants it, or the proper way that she would prefer to be worshipped, then the god of devotion will send a priest to say, you need to fix this, like a health inspector. They're coming in and investigating
that's
stuff like this.
Fucking great.
They are a...
The gods outsourced their, like, compliance.
They're basically...
Like, their compliance broker.
Their compliance god for their other gods. Yes. That is my idea.
I love it. All absolutely right. Spectacular.
All right, let's throw your lasagna in there. Roll it.
17, God of Assassins.
Oh, yeah, that's, you know.
That's, all I want to do is have a, like, shadowy, murky, like, you know.
Typical?
Yeah, it's where my mind immediately goes. I think, let me do this a little bit differently. I think the God of Assassins is a god. The best assassins are those that you don't know that they're assassins. So I think this God of Assassins is a god of secrets. And also a god of, it's hard to tell. The god of assassins has no form of their own. They only look and appear like other deities because, again, a good assassin is one you can't tell from other beings, right? Yeah. They just blend into the crowd. They're not dressed in black like ninjas and shadows. They're like, no, they're dressed like
normal
repairmen or business people, right? Like
compliance workers.
Compliance workers. And so I think that this God of Assassins is different in that it is very, very hard to tell exactly what, if you are communicating or praying to a deity, are you actually communicating or praying to a deity, or is this actually the God of Assassins?
Yeah.
And manipulating the secrets. I think that's how I'm going to make that a little different.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, what stuck for you?
I'm going to stick with the broken oaths. I remember putting that on there and like reading through Oathbreakers and being like, this could be interesting.
It'll be weird.
It'll be weird, but I think we made something really... I like the way that we mapped it out into, you know, it was immortal, but then it also... It impacts the way that gods feel about their sworn, like you said, they only want the most fervent believers.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. And I like the idea in the redemption arc of the redemption and death deities being interdependent.
Yeah.
Like they both can't do their jobs. They have to cooperate. They're not inextricably separate, which is something that a lot of fantasy pantheons try and do, is keep them, oh, the god of the moon is separate from the god of sun. No, they actually would impact each other quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so I like that you built that in there. I think that's very, very cool.
Yeah.
What's up for you?
It's hard to remember a lot of what we talked about because it was like improv'd and I don't like remember even, I barely remember my idea at all.
Yeah.
But I think the god of devotion is really fun.
The compliance.
I like the idea of
the auditor.
The auditor. Like, I like the idea of gods that are like, have godlike powers, but are doing like these just weird tasks that you're like, that's a god level. And I like the idea of gods supporting each other. I like the idea that a pantheon isn't a competitive thing and is actively trying to make sure that they are all getting their due. Yeah. And I think a lot of our ideas talked about that in one way or another. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about it, I know, in the Broken Nose as well, of like this kind of like understanding that you need to cooperate on certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be really interesting. And the god devotion is like definitely the spirit of that is actively cooperating because there's a god who is ensuring that everything's great. Yeah. You're all getting what you want. No one's angry. No one's needs aren't being met. We're taking care of it.
Right.
Got it.
And so that frees us all from cosmic conflict.
Well, maybe.
Potentially.
It alleviates some of the pressure. So, well, that's what stuck for us. Let us know what stuck for you. Email's in the show notes.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.